This episode of the Energy Stoners Cafe is sponsored by the Black Arts Matter Network, blackartsmatter.net. Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Welcome back to the Energy Stoners Cafe, everyone. I really am happy to know that you're coming to listen to the show. So today, I have a great guest. I have not met this gentleman yet, although someone that we are connected to is a friend of the show. This gentleman is an educator, and he's a music educator. And there's been a lot of talk about the arts and education and the needs of people, learning needs, and people with special learning needs. Welcome to the show, Lee Stockner from Musically Inclined. How are you doing today?
I'm great, Toni. Thank you so much for having me as a guest. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, I appreciate your time, Lee. I'm very intrigued with this program that you've developed. As someone that used to play music, I find it very interesting, and I'm curious as to how you came up with this and why it wasn't thought of before. Tell the audience a little bit about your program, your method to teach people with special needs how to play the piano.
For me, a few specific circumstances came through at around the same time that really spurned this entire project forward. I'm a classical musician since I'm very young. I started taking lessons when I was about 5. And by the time I was 15, my wonderful teacher, Diane, had actually trained me to be a teacher. So I started teaching when I was 15. And around the time I was 25, when I was a little bit lost in my life and not sure what direction to take things in, I was working at a music store, and down came a young man who was diagnosed with autism. And it was the first person with autism that I had ever met. And the mom asked the owner of the music store if he had anybody on staff that can work with somebody with autism. He said, no, not specifically, but I have a good feeling about my employee, Lee, over here. I think he might be the right person for you to work with. So I started talking with the mom. She started explaining to me a handful of different really interesting things about autism. And I realized that my reality was about to be a bit warped as I attempted to work with this young man, because everything was going to have to be kind of handled a little bit differently, even though we were headed toward the same types of goals that I normally work for. So anyway, I started working with him. The mom thought I was a natural. She convinced me to get a job at a school for other individuals with autism. And I started working at a school, and it was going very, very well over there. I'm a pretty big guy, so they put me with some big, tough kids. And as I learned what I was doing, a couple of ideas popped into my head. And the next thing I knew, I created an entire method in order to teach individuals with autism and other special needs how to play the piano. I got to combine the two things I was most passionate about, special education and music education.
So how did you come up with this method? Was it something that was just like instinctively came out? Was it an offshoot of some other method?
You know, that it's a bit of a hybrid answer, whereas it's completely my own idea. The method is my own idea. There's a system of colored rings and the keyboard being labeled a certain way. But it was when I saw a few students of mine typing, and I saw how their fingers were moving. And I said, well, if they could type like that and they could press on those keys in that order, maybe we could take that same general motion and turn it into something at the piano. And then I did some brainstorming for some adaptive materials. And fortunately enough for myself, I came up with the idea that exists today as occupational octaves pretty quickly.
Occupational octaves.
Yep, that's the name of the program.
Tell me what happens like when someone actually completes your course of study. What have you observed the changes that you've observed in these students?
Well, there's no such thing really as completing the course of study, because I've designed this program so that students that I work with could mimic the educational life that I had with my teacher. I could still be taking lessons with my teacher today if I had the time to. Music education is a nonstop process, hopefully, if things are done well and done correctly. So there is no actual end game. Some students end up discontinuing lessons because that's the way the music lesson game goes, and other students will be with me for the long haul. And the types of changes that I started to notice were really incredible. In the world of autism, we talk about something called stimming, where a student or a client or a participant might be flapping their hands or flapping something around and looking at that flapping motion and staring at it relatively obsessively. It's something you tend to see at times of anxiety or times of excitement or times of stimulation. And people with autism, if you are somebody that stims, it seems to be pretty difficult to control. And what I see mostly is that stims go down. And usually when somebody is stimming and they're overexcited, breathing could get a little out of whack. The breathing patterns could be a bit off kilter. They could be breathing too fast or too heavily. And I see breathing calm down a lot. And that's one of my favorite things to see. It's very, very, very rewarding as a teacher to watch somebody who you know is normally out of breath just when they're sitting down because they have so much movement happening, to be calm. And on top of the calmness, to be able to hear the beautiful music that I've put in as part of the curriculum. It's a win-win-win.
Do you find the students appreciate the music that they're making, or is it more a task that they're performing?
So I believe that the students are loving the experience. I'm a little bit odd in the world of being a classical musician, where I'm a classical musician that doesn't love classical music. What I personally love is rock music. You pop open my Spotify, it's Pearl Jam and it's Led Zeppelin. That's what I love. Playing music, I love as well, but I never fell in love as a listener to classical music. But loving playing it is something totally different. And it was very rare that my teacher would ever say to me, Lee, what song do you want to play? It was more like she gave me two or three songs as an option. She'd play them for me, and then I'd pick one as the song that I'm going to work on for the next 6 months. And that's the type of scenario that I've been able to put forth for the students I work with. So it's not so much that they fell in love with a particular song, it's that they're falling in love with the process. And then on top of the process, all the hard work that you put into it, the songs that come out, I think that you fall in love with those songs after a while, one way or another.
I imagine that everybody that's participating, you and the students, feel a sense of accomplishment when someone actually masters a piece.
Oh, there's nothing like it. There's just nothing like it. When music comes out of your own fingers because you've repeated the fundamental steps over and over in order for that phenomenon to occur, whether you're teaching it or whether you're engaging it yourself, it is amazing. It's absolutely amazing, and it never, ever gets old. I'm over 20 years into my piano teaching career, over 10 years into my career working with special needs learners at the piano, and it just never, ever gets old.
Do you ever find a student that's like a true savant? You know, I've seen stories over the years. You're watching, let's say, a news story. I remember seeing a story on 60 Minutes years ago, and this particular gentleman was autistic, and he had no speech, but he could sit down and he could play anything on the piano as if he was, he was like a concert pianist. I call that being like a total savant. You know, do you ever find a student like that you're working with that just has a natural gift and it's almost the only thing they can do?
I have had a couple of students that fit some generally similar profiles. Not exactly like what you just described, but what my program is prided on more and more is actually the students that don't display a talent that end up getting to engage and end up actually getting to play. See, natural talents come out all the time, autism or no autism. It's when you have a situation where somebody that doesn't have any kind of natural talent is all of a sudden finding themselves in a position where they're performing. That, to me, is even more special than the savant type of scenario, which is very, very rare. And, you know, those situations can only teach us so much. They could really teach you about that individual person, but not about what other people can do. It's very centered around that individual person. And my fascination is breaking things down in ways that everybody can learn.
Do you ever work with non-autistic people, like people that are just regular people that don't have autism? Do you teach them as well?
Sure. Well, I started out for 10, 12 years only teaching individuals that were just mainstream piano lesson students, whether it's the 5-year-old that's being dropped off by mom, the 16-year-old that just got their learner's permit and is coming in, or the 50-year-old with a family that just wants to learn to play.
Wow.
So I've worked with everybody, but now the main gist of my work is centered around the special needs community. Although when I do have the chance to work with somebody who we would consider neurotypical or mainstream, I love it because that's a part of my life I miss. I miss the traditional piano lesson aspect of things as much as I adore what I do now.
It sounds like your passion is working with the special needs students.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
So I imagine that your occupational octaves, you have some aspirations for that.
Always. Yeah, always. Every day I'm thinking about those aspirations. The biggest two, I would say, I guess actually let's say the biggest three, are to put the piano directly into the special needs classroom. I don't know if you know what an IEP is, an individualized educational plan, but
yes.
All students that have an IEP have very specific goals that need to be met, and then creative teachers and therapists try to find the best ways that they can find in order to actually make an improvement on that goal. And I have taken the piano using occupational octaves and broken it down into a system that virtually anybody could teach, whether or not you have a music background. And I think just about every kid out there with an IEP has a goal that could be reached through the piano. So number one is to bring the piano directly into classrooms. Number two is veterans hospitals, Walter Reed Medical Center. You know, that's one of my big dreams. My father is a United States Army veteran, and the veteran population is one of the populations that keeps us safe enough to be able to have podcasts and run businesses. So those are some people I would really, really like to give back to for everything that they've done. And then the third category would be down the road to bring this program to prisons, because I think that prisoners, regardless of how somebody gets there, we want to improve everybody's quality of life when we can. And when you are focused and connected to something like the piano and you're actually producing really wonderful sounding results that are wholesome and they're right from your own fingertips, you have a chance to improve somebody's quality of life in a very significant way.
I imagine it feels like magic for those people. When someone actually is able to sit down and do this, there must be a magical feeling to this for everyone. It's not what people would expect to come out of someone with autism.
You know, I just finished writing a blog that I'm going to be releasing in the next week or so, where what I discuss is actually a little bit about the magic of music. And one of the things that I've come to not enjoy about my career is that I'm kind of pulling the curtains back a little bit and showing people what this magic is all about. And to me, what I think I see more and more about that magic of music is not about something that's present. It's about providing people with moments where the stress and anxiety of life could not be present for a few minutes. And the lack of presence, the temporary absence of all the stressful things that go on in life, those temporary absences are where we actually get to enjoy ourselves. It's where we actually get to be calm. It's where we actually get to chill out a little bit and not think about the many, many things that are stressing us. Because, hey, life is stressful.
Yeah.
Even for the most successful people with the easiest lives in comparison to other people, life is still a stressful thing. And we all struggle to find ways to take our minds off of the stresses. And if you could not only take your mind off of the stress, but also produce music at the same time, again, one of the most wholesome and incredible things we can encounter in life, I think that that is something that everybody should experience at some point or another. And having a program where the language of music itself has been made so much easier, down to the point where people with really tremendous challenges are playing classical music, to me, that's something that we should try to get into everybody's hands one way or another.
So in your blog, you talk, I guess, about these things. How can someone find your blog?
On my website, occupationaloctaves.com, we have a couple of links to a couple of blogs and articles, including something I'm very, very proud of. Recently, I published a paper in Traditional Medicine Research named Classical Piano as a Pathway to Flow States for Learners with Disabilities. And that really brings the main scope of my work all together into one shot.
It's interesting. It's in a traditional medical journal because, you know, a lot of doctors play the piano. I mean, a lot of doctors that I know play the piano, if I say it like that. It's not unusual for them to play the piano. I'm not sure of exactly why. My director, Jim, and I were talking about how, you know, we were talking about someone that plays the drums. And I said, well, piano is a percussion instrument as well. I'm wondering why that is. I think there's something about, I guess to a person that's a lay person to music, the piano seems like the traditional master instrument. It all starts there. It feels that way. It all starts there at the piano.
I believe in that. I think a lot of the reason why that is the case is, first of all, you can make a lot of music as just one person. Most other instruments, you can't make a lot of music. You could make one, maybe two sounds at the same time. If you're talking about the drums, you could add, you know, a couple of more sounds. But for the most part, with instruments, you're only making one sound at a time. Whereas with the piano, you get to play multiple roles at the same time. You get to play the treble role while you're playing the bass role, while you're playing the percussion role. So you have this this platforming and scaffolding of different needs, different goals, different results that you're trying to put together at the same time. And also the piano just looks like a repeated pattern, which is exactly what it is. So when you want to visualize things, to visualize something on a piano is miles and miles easier than trying to visualize it on a guitar or trying to visualize it on a flute, because those instruments are set up in such different ways. The piano, you could just look at the landscape of everything and really, really think things through. So it doesn't surprise me in any way. And, you know, I tell people all the time, people will ask me, oh, you do piano with individuals. That's great. Do you do guitar? Then, you know, I could teach you the guitar, but the guitar is not button pressing like the piano. And the piano and the drums also, because you're talking about pad hitting, the piano brings such a massive level of accessibility that it never surprises me that it is the route into a number of different higher level activities. And, you know, I think of myself as a prime example. Like I was telling you when we had our recent conversation, I'm diagnosed attention deficit myself. I had an IEP when I was in middle school and in high school. I had a terrible, terrible time with my postgraduate education. I never got past an associate's degree. Now, here I am, the guy being interviewed. I own the company. I publish the books. I teach the lessons. I train the teachers. I created the digital platform. I went and I got all of the intellectual property I needed to do. I opened up my own studio, and because of the COVID crisis, we ended up closing it. But I've done all of these higher level things. You know, I'm at the administrative level with what I do, and I believe wholeheartedly that my experience as a classical musician is really what set my mind up to be able to encounter and try to get through all of these things. You're juggling so many different things at the same time, yet you have to keep them all in a rhythm and in a level of togetherness. And my experiences that are similar to that in life are all behind the piano.
There's something about classical training on an instrument, and the piano in particular, but I think there are other instruments as well, but there's something about that foundation of classical training that, and I would bet dollars to donuts that it helped you to be very good at playing rock and roll because just of having that foundation.
Absolutely, absolutely. Compared to like friends of mine that, you know, grabbed the guitar and wanted to learn how to play rock music, I was just at such a ridiculous advantage because I had started out with the classical. You know, you start with the hardest thing and then it opens up your world to everything else. And I think that my life at the piano made my enjoyment life of playing rock music just cake. It's so fun. It's so easy. It's been said that music is cheesecake for the brain. And this has definitely helped me with the dessert.
You know, it's interesting. I think that in the arts, I think that people that are not in the arts, and most people are not in the arts, okay? I think I can say that pretty qualitatively here. They don't understand that art is a discipline. As myself, as you're talking about foundation for music and classical music as a foundation for all music, I can probably say that it probably applies to visual arts. I'm like a self-taught artist. I have no classical training or minimal. Maybe I took a couple of courses later in life at the advice of someone that I knew that was a trained artist, and he just said, you take these life drawing classes, which are really fundamental, you'll see right away how it's going to change your work. And he was absolutely right. I can say that when I go in to do a painting, it's almost like giving birth to something, because it's a struggle, because I don't have that foundation, except for little things that I picked up from people that were classically trained. But, you know, getting back to, you know, your program, Occupational Octaves, I can say that with music, the first thing that comes to mind with me, and I've said this to a mutual connection of ours, is that when I took lessons, it helped me with so many things that you would not have most people wouldn't anticipate. The music lessons, playing the piano, actually helped with my math skills. I wasn't good at math, and I started playing the piano, and my math skills improved. And even though I don't really remember how to actually read music, like what each note is, but I understand the relationship between them, where I could sing in a church choir and look at the music and know what key it's in and know where to start and know the relationship between one note and the next. I'm just gonna ask you this. Do you think that being able to do those kinds of things, they're so subtle, but they're so significant, I imagine that it plays into the life of a special needs person. Life becomes a little bit more understandable. It's just a thing I'm thinking. I'm wondering how you feel about that, especially considering autistic individuals.
So, you know, these are always relatively challenging questions for somebody like me, because I have a million examples where the answer is a clear, loud yes to me. However, they're anecdotal, and I stay as far away from anecdotal evidence as I can, for a number of reasons. So what I'll do is I'll share with you one particular example, because the mother of this boy is a PhD licensed psychologist.
Okay.
Psychology is her field, and her son is one of my students who is a really, really talented drummer, but only by nature, meaning he can't open up drum music and play it and read it. He could hear things and he could copy it, and he does it so well that I play along with him and we have jam sessions. Anyhow, he puts the rings on his fingers, and he's been playing the piano with me. And a couple of months ago, his mom comes up to me, and she's like, Lee, you know, I got to tell you, his speech in the past 6 months since we started with you has been improving. Now, this guy is 22, 23 years old, so we're well out of that educational age territory where he's learning and constantly has therapists to try to help him with things like that. That's all, you know, the past with him now. And now he just has the things that he does. And she said, this is the only thing that has changed in the past handful of months. His word recall is so much better all of a sudden. His ability to get sentences straight out with confidence is super improved. And the only thing that's different is you doing piano lessons with him. And I personally believe it has to do with, I think the phonemics of words and the phonemics of music work very similarly, meaning a syllable, you combine it to be a word, you combine the words to be sentences, the sentences to be paragraphs, the paragraphs to be pages, and so on and so forth. I think that music really, really works the same way. You know, it's a note, then it's a phrase, then it's a line, then it's a, you know, a stanza, then it's a page, then it's a piece, you know, and so on and so forth. So I think that they're all connected, and I think that it's true just about every time that there are these improvements that go on because of music. I'm just very hesitant to say student A said the sentence on Tuesday afternoon better than he would have said it if it weren't for piano. That's always very difficult to do, but I think the anecdotal evidence is very, very loud and very, very legitimate.
I mean, it sounds like you're not really inclined to set up a formal study and start taking actual data down, but I'm curious about it. I wish somebody would do it for you, because I really believe that there are changes that are made, especially with, you know, it seems like now that autism has become something that is part of our regular vocabulary now. And in a way, it's hard to say that you could go through life without meeting somebody that has some version of it. But it'd be interesting to see if someone would actually take some measurements to see what the change is. Because I always feel it as a visual artist. Many times I've found it necessary to defend the validity of what I'm doing, because often, you know, depending upon the family or the circumstances you grew up with, some families would discourage you, a child, from pursuing arts because they assume that they're not going to do well. If someone would just take some clear-cut evidence, you know, some clear-cut data to show like how improvement can be measured, that would be really helpful. So artists don't have to always have to constantly defend being an artist. It's hard to get respect as an artist sometimes unless you have some hard numbers. It sounds like that you're doing something so special. Be nice to be able to quantify it. To me, it seems it would be worth it. I mean, I wouldn't be the person to do that, although I've done some research on some things. But, you know, I think there are people out there, there'll probably be people listening that would be interested in doing that.
Well, I completely agree. And, you know, thank you for encouraging me in that direction. I have the paper in mind and the research study in mind that I want to prove. And it's very closely related to the paper that I published in Traditional Medicine Research. And it's not all about proving the academic gains that could be made. It's actually about proving the physical manifestations and the positive physical manifestations that can come from actually playing and performing. The paper that I published is based strongly on a paper that came before it named The Psychophysiology of Flow During Piano Playing, where the participants who are high-level players were actually medically monitored for blood pressure, for heart rate variability, to see what actually happens when you enter into a state of flow at the piano. And the benefits are absolutely tremendous. So the first big research project that I'm hoping to be able to arrange one day is to recreate the original research project that was done, the psychophysiology of flow during piano playing, with the students on the autism spectrum that I actually teach and have been using my program for a number of years. I'm very, very curious about the academic benefits for sure, but my main fascination is with the psychophysiological benefits, because when you're talking about a category of people like people with an autism diagnosis, you're talking about a category of people where the depression rates are inherently high, and we need things to help people lower their depression rates. And that's the way that I've begun to see the piano and to see music and to see its real highest level purpose.
Highest level purpose. I like thinking of it that way. I imagine that the same kind of study could be done with visual artists as well, because I think that most visual artists, we call it the zone. When you get in the zone, and it could last an hour, a couple of hours, it could last a couple of months being in the zone.
Sure.
I could talk to you more about this, about, you know, PTSD or post-concussion syndrome as well, and being able to do art during that, and the kind of work that comes out of someone when they're in a state of flow because of a trauma to the brain.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What you're doing is so fascinating. I could definitely see how it would work well with other populations, you know, the prison population we talked about, and also veterans. Veterans can benefit from this, the ones that are suffering from the symptoms of PTSD.
That's one of the goals. That's one of the real dreams, to put together a situation where somebody whose mind is constantly interrupted by negative stimuli is able to be free of that for a little period of time, because the mind and the body are so wrapped up in all of the instructions and all the movements and all the goals you have at the piano, with this ultimate presentation by the end of it of, did I play the song? You know, did it come out? Did this actually come out of my fingers?
Right.
And what you're talking about with being in the zone and referring to it as flow, that's exactly what's going on. And you actually bring me to something that is also of great importance to me. One of my long-term goals is to help people see that are in similar fields to you and I, that as a piano teacher, I'm actually a flow teacher, but music is my medium. If you're a yoga instructor, flow is your actual goal. That's what you're actually teaching. but yoga is your medium. If you're in doing track and field or team sports or chess, whatever it is, if you have one of these endeavors going on that you can get lost in and completely absorbed in and have relief from other aspects of life because of your exposure and your time spent in it, that's all about what the flow state is related to. And I would encourage you actually to hop onto Google and type in flow. I could send you an email with the gentleman's name who really got the flow studies going. He's a Hungarian man named Dr. Mihai Shinsek Mihai.
What? Say it again.
Dr. Mihai. It's actually pronounced Csikszent Mihai.
It's a rough one.
It's a rough one to spell for sure, but he's an incredibly, incredibly brilliant man. People refer to him as the godfather of flow, and I would really strongly suggest going up to YouTube and Google and finding what you can on him. And he actually did a TED Talk that talks about flow at the piano, and it's what changed my life altogether. It's what made me realize that occupational octaves at its best usage is bringing people into a state of flow. And it's a rather large buildup of information for it all to make sense. But long story short, to experience flow, you need to be somewhat of an expert at the point of what you're working at. So if you want to experience flow with watercolors, you're probably not going to be ready to experience it with certain pastels because you don't know how to use them well enough yet. So you need to have a certain degree of expertise in what you're doing in order to experience a flow state. And what occupational octaves does is it breaks the instructions of playing music down to such an easy degree that it does just that. It becomes accessible to everybody in a level of expertise, meaning you have no confusion at all with what you're supposed to do at the piano when you're using occupational octaves, because it's been broken down to something so simple. And that's why we play challenging music with a simple language. If you take the leap with this, you actually have a chance to bring together the three constructs of a flow state, which is emotion, concentration, and expertise.
It's funny, expertise is in there, because I would think that someone could be in, I'll say, the zone, that's my word, without expertise.
You start to get into some very specific definitions here. One of the factors is called a challenge-skill balance, which means that the material cannot be so difficult that it creates anxiety, nor so easy that it creates boredom. So it's more like you have to be an expert at your level of challenge skill balance. So that's to say, even though I'm not an expert guitar player, I could still experience flow at the guitar as long as I do it in a place, my performance choice is in a place that is not going to create anxiety, nor is it going to create boredom for me. It's right in the middle of the two. So it's expertise, but at a certain appropriate level to yourself.
I like the fact that you stress expertise. So often I find that in dealing with just people in general, let's say they're working with a group of children that are of some need. I don't know if necessarily like an intellectual special needs or just special needs because they're in poverty. And there are some people that, you know, treat them all the work that they put out as equal, which I think is appropriate for because they're children and they're not competing for anything. But it's easy for someone that's an artist, I'm not going to say myself necessarily, but I think it's easy for an artist to be able to recognize of this collective work, visual work, that one particular or a certain students or one or two particular students are showing such tremendous inherent talent for the work that they put out in such a simplified way. You know, I'm wondering if they experience flow when they're doing it. I've taught children like that. And it's basically a collective class, a class where the collective is just like a microcosm of the collective within that particular population. But every now and then, I'll say, you know, it always happens. There's always one, at least one, that stands out, that you know that they're exceptional above the others in terms of what they're capable of. And also their ability to think outside of the box and do something exceptionally creative with it, and they're untaught. And I imagine this happens with music. I mean, I know people that never took a lesson and they just play. You see that a lot with the guitar.
You know, some people just have natural adaptability to certain mediums of certain things. My fingers mold to the piano incredibly, incredibly well. They always have from day one. I am not a very good guitar player. My fingers, I understand what I'm supposed to do, but my fingers do not mold to that instrument well. My mind does not mold to having my hands do two different things very well. You know, one is pressing on the string, the other one is stroking the string or the chord. And I just don't have a real talent for it. You know, I'm an okay player and everything, but there's no talent there. And those are the unexplainable things in my estimation, why, you know, one is like this and one is like that. It just kind of is what it is to me.
Well, you know, it's kind of like, you know, what you said in the beginning, it's something about, you know, you don't have to go through a physical change with the piano. With other instruments, you do have to adapt your body more than you do when you're playing the piano. You just have to sit up straight and put your hands in front of you and do what you know. I think what you're doing with occupational octaves is something that is destined to become, I guess, a standard vernacular for teaching people with special needs. I mean, I think it's ingenious. I want to try it. So I'm going to ask you, Lee, to tell the audience how they can get in touch with you. You know, and I'll take the notes too, because I'll get in touch with you because I want to have you back on. But I think it'd be nice if you have a keyboard to bring it to my studio and I would experiment with it.
I think that would be very informative for your audience.
I think so too. They'll love it too.
Great. That sounds terrific.
How can the audience get in touch with you if they want to contact you about occupational octaves?
Well, the easiest thing to do is going to be going directly to occupationaloctaves.com. That's octaves is plural. You could also type in oopianolessons.com, and it will bring you to the same place. So I recommend going either way. And we have multiple forms to fill out on the page, depending on what you're interested in. And if you fill something out, we'll get in touch with you. There are links to purchase the book program if you're interested. And there is actually a free download of some music written in this program. However, you'll need a set of the colored rings that go along with this program in order to use it. So make sure if you fill out the form to put your full address in, and we will mail you one free set of the rings so you could try the program out for yourself.
Oopianolessons.com.
Oopianolessons.com. You could also type in occupationaloctaves.com. And, you know, I'm sorry for all these different web handles, but...
No, it's all right. No, it's good.
The other thing you could do if you'd like is email me directly. It's Lee, L-E-E, at occupationaloctavespiano.com. And if you're emailing, you do have to write the word piano.
So there you have it, everybody. And you can get piano lessons. I think some organizations that I'm thinking of in particular, it would behoove them to contact you about this because you have something that could help the populations that they serve. And I'm going to thank you, Lee, because this is not our last conversation. I'm so fascinated by this. I mean, you remember how excited I got when I found out about it. Well, I'm still as excited about this program. I think it's outstanding. I've never heard anything about like this. I wish that when I was a young girl that this program had existed, because I probably would have gone to Juilliard the way my grandmother wanted me to. I'm not going. I'm afraid to play in front of people. But if I had had this, I would have. I might have done it. You never know.
Pop those rings on and go. Well, the students that have used this have had really, really great recitals. I was just actually reminded recently, a few years ago, we got to perform at the Columbia University School of Psychiatry for an event that was going on, and in the audience was Jean Kennedy Smith, who passed away about 3-4 weeks ago. She was the remaining sibling of JFK, and while one of my students wearing the rings playing Fear Elise was going, I look up and there she is wiping tears from her eyes, and she came up to all my students after and gave us all a big hug and told the kids how proud she was of them, and it was a lovely event.
Wow, that's something to remember.
So we do love the live performances, but just one quick note that I'd like to add in. If there are any institutions, organizations, districts, therapeutic centers that are curious about this program, we actually not only offer the free PDF, but we also have our book series. And then on top of it, we also have a cloud-based platform that's designed with HIPAA and FERPA and STAR security for making sure that all of the information that is kept on students and clients is kept safe and secure. And in this system, we have all of the music preloaded. We have an IEP goal bank preloaded. We have step-by-step instructions, and you save the data right on there, and it actually produces the data for you in these beautiful graphs and Excel sheets and PDFs. So not only do we supply the curriculum, we supply the end-to-end activity for your teachers, for your students, for your administrators, for your parents. So we're really loaded up and ready to go to bring this into larger organizations and have people playing and making great musical accomplishments and being a part of the world that I'm a part of, which is the world of playing Beethoven and Bach and Mozart and more.
Sounds like a really healing endeavor. And I'm going to wrap it up for now because, I mean, by now you figured out I can talk. I can not. And I really am very interested in learning more about this program and seeing it in action firsthand. I'm not going to label myself, but I do have some special learning needs. I always have. But even more so because of circumstances that have occurred throughout life. I'm also very interested in helping other people. And I think that your program is something that is so well packaged. You're a mindful man, Lee Stockner. You really are.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that.
You're a very mindful man, and I really appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you so much.
I'm looking forward to interview number two at your place with the keyboard.
Yes, it's going to happen, and my audience will be waiting for it as well because they do tune in. You know, it's always great when you find out they're actually listening. But thanks again for coming on the show, and I'm going to say thanks to the audience for listening to this episode of Energy Stoners Cafe, and we will have Lee Stockner back. It might not be in this particular vernacular. It might be on my other show, Talk with TQ, but it's always the same me, and it's always the same you. So we'll see you next time. And thank you, Lee Stockner. And thank you, Occupational Octaves. I'm going to say it again, Musically Inclined. I'm just going to put it out there so people can start looking you up. And thanks again, audience, for coming. And I always look forward to getting your emails, and I'll respond to them because I love getting the commentary. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.